kind of undeclared with a lot of credits. So I went into English, and that's one of my majors. Communications is my other major, so I have a double major. It started off as a minor, and the more I took it, the more I got interested in it, and yeah, ended up now having also another minor, which is international studies.
Wow.
So I've created quite a big ecosystem for myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. A lot of writing and reading and worldly issues, which I'm really, really interested in. And I also have a certificate in writing and rhetoric. So that's how you know SFU offers a lot of great opportunities too. I feel like I'm doing a spokes show for SFU. I used to be a tour guide in my first and second year. I did tours for students around SFU, so I feel like I'm getting back into that public service persona, you know?
Well, I mean, that's we're not directly affiliated with the university, but we, depend on SFU.
Hopefully lots of students are listening to this right now.
Yeah, totally. And we depend on students for their support, and so it's good to support the university as well.
Yeah, and also understand that life can take you so many ways. I don't know. Right now I'm understanding that as an undergraduate student, I kind of put a lot of different disciplines in my area, and that's really benefited me, and I hope that other people will take that as well, because I know some people that just feel like they can't really try out things, but I've really enjoyed all the classes I've taken at SFU with the professors and stuff, and yeah, I think it's helped me a lot just understand myself and the world. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and one of the cool things about the university is that you can be very specific, right? You can build a program or a degree or follow a path that focuses very narrowly on one thing, or mm-hmm. you can chase a whole lot of different things.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Everyone's on their own path, and yeah, it just takes time to figure out what it is that you're interested in. And so I'm happy to be on the radio because this is something I'm also interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Talk journalism, and yeah, just being in an environment where you kind of have to be on the ball, and you don't really have to let yourself overthink things, mm-hmm. which I think is a really cool part about being on air.
Yeah, there's no time for that when you're live.
Exactly.
Right? It just happens.
Yeah.
you wanted to talk a little bit about, one of the most unfortunate things in the news right now, and that is the killing of Renee Nicole Good by an ICE agent in Minneapolis.
Yes, I feel like this moment, especially in the wake of so many awful and horrific violence in this world, it really brings you down to the level of the everyday. And I think that she's somebody who deserves to be known, deserves to be remembered, because really, she reminds me a lot of just the everyday person, somebody who cares a lot about people and community and life. And I was reading her story today and yesterday, and it just, it felt like something that needed to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and a real, a real personal or directly human reminder of the consequences of political rhetoric and the actions and fascism and the general thrust of American politics for the last decade or so.
Definitely. It's something that has so much soft power on the world too. And so when we see these kinds of horrific acts happening and being pushed under the rug or being completely turned around from what has actually happened and what we can see with our own eyes, a lot of these videos, especially of what just happened, are so evident on social media or just online, and the news coverage and social media coverage has coming from two very different places now, and it makes it hard for people to have a sense of clarity, and I think that's why we need to talk about these stories and to uplift the people behind them rather than just the story of what could have been, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think this is a case where it's just made so very clear, like you're saying, that there is, sort of the reality of the events as shown through video and eyewitness accounts versus what the Trump government and people in power and the media organizations that are beholden to them, the way that they're describing the events and the straight out lying about what has happened. I don't think it's news to anyone that, you know, the Trump administration is lying about things, but this is one, like, very clearly explicit way where it's just right out there.
Yeah, and I think that I hope this will maybe cross those borders of misinformation and fake news, but a lot of the times we don't know what's on other people's algorithms, mm-hmm. and that's what's the hard part about social media and the reason why Donald Trump has his own social media account. Truth Social is filled with just his version of history. He's rewriting history, and we're seeing it with our own eyes, and I think that's a really hard time to be a part of, the world right now. It's something that we never thought we would have to see again. You know, I think my mom went to SFU. She was in the communications department, and she at that time was dealing with so much as well. And I think that, you know, we hope history will not repeat itself. We hope that there will be some sort of change and revolution. But a lot of the times, you know, the revolution will not be televised. And what does that mean on social media now? It's a really difficult situation to be in and to not have clarity as a young person of what even the possibilities are for change, or, like, in some ways, radical hope is all that we have. And trying to imagine a future where this doesn't become a reality. And it's hard when you can see it changing in front of your own eyes, you know? It's giving a lot of people this desensitized version of history as well, like kind of moving past this situation. And that's why I really wanted to talk about her, because I think that it's something that will, in my opinion, be in the history books. I think this is a fork in the road because it's, yeah, it's a white woman. There's a lot of talk now as well about white guilt and the impact of seeing somebody who has the same skin color as you experience this atrocity, and to also just be a part of the neighborhood. You know, she was somebody who was involved in so many people's lives, and she had a son. He was 6 years old. Like, she is somebody who is also queer. She was with, yeah, she was with her husband, passed away a few years ago, I heard, and she's with a woman now, and it's like this is a real human that was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But that is the worst part about it, is that there should not have been that wrong place. There should not have been that wrong time. That didn't need to happen at all. Like, the ICE agents in Minneapolis are overstepping in so many ways that are so evident, and it's affecting so many different sectors. Like, Minneapolis has been the target of this since George Floyd, you know, mm-hmm. and this type of history is really hard on a place that has also so much pride and so much, like, power in my opinion, in America. You know, like, Minneapolis has also been the spot of so much power and mm-hmm. so much resistance and so much change, and so to see this dichotomy happening in just one place all the time, it's really jarring, I think, for a lot of people that I know from Minneapolis as well. They're seeing this is a attack on their, like, lifestyle of their livelihood, of their family, you know, and it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really bringing something, and when I say something, I'm referring to sort of the, you know, the deployment of ICE to everywhere across America. Like, just really bringing that home in a way that I think, you know, if you've been paying attention to the news for the last few years anyway, you know that this is happening and that, you know, they're out there, but it can be very sort of arm's length, right? And particularly as you referred to this being a white woman who was killed, Renee Nicole Good, that also for a lot of folks, a lot of white Americans, it could be very easy to be like, oh, well, but it's not going to happen to me, right? And I think that this, yeah, really is a very sort of poignant moment where, you know, there are a lot of people who are like, well, yeah, it can happen to you, right? But I do think that that it is potentially that sort of watershed moment, right?
Definitely. And I hope that it is. But a lot of people, in my opinion, that you know, that live in a completely different reality. I really see it as a different reality. They don't see these situations through any lens other than, you know, like a means to an end, mm-hmm. you know? And so a lot of the people that will look at the situation too will not, we'll believe what's seen on Truth Social. Like, it's heinous. Imagine being her family and seeing that, like, somebody is saying that she was trying to run somebody over, you know? Like, she's, mm-hmm. Renee Nicole Good is 37 years old, you know? She's a young person who was scared of her life. Like, she's not trying to run anybody over, you know what I mean? And it makes a lot of this rhetoric easier to swallow in some ways, because the more that you believe what's on Truth Social, the more that it's hard to stop believing it. Because once you change your paradigm, it's hard, you know? It's mm-hmm. hard to get out of it. It's hard to break out of your way of thinking, especially when you're surrounded by an algorithm or by a community that reinforces it. And so my hope is that the situation, with more than just her as a martyr, you know, will actually showcase that the system itself is broken. The fact that these ICE agents are coming in is just a broken system, and so we should change the system, right? And I think that being a young woman in America, I can't imagine how hard it is, because no matter what you do, you can be painted as, you know, against the system, or, you know, your narrative can change. And, you know, especially being a young queer woman, you know, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what kinds of jokes or stories are being told about her in that way, because of the homophobia, transphobia that is also raking a lot of the, like, North American world, you know. And I think, yeah, North American world isn't a real sentence, but you know what I mean. Yeah, I feel like it's a hard time to be a woman in the world, but it's a harder time, I think, as well, to be just a human, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless.
Yeah, and getting harder in America in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You did also, and I think it's important that we do want to, you know, focus beyond the sort of broader implications of Renee Nicole Good's murder, to focus on her as a person, right?
Yes, definitely. And so I think that the story that I saw on the Star Tribune really highlighted her as a poet as well. And she had that in her Instagram bio, I think. And I think the fact that we can also know all of this information so quickly is an interesting situation. It's both privileged, because I think that she and her words and her voice should be heard, and because of how fast the news goes, you know, you want to savor this moment and to honor her in this moment, you know, before it passes, because we never know what's going to be coming around the corner, you know. And so there's a poem that she had won an award for, and it was really beautiful, and it is quite, yeah, it's quite an interesting and poignant poem, I think, especially regarding the topics that she's talking about. And the poem was called On Learning to Dissect Fetal Pigs. And she won the prestigious Academy of American Poets Prize for that poem in 2020. And yeah, I thought I would read that poem, if that's all right with everybody.
Yeah, totally.
On Learning to Dissect Fetal Pigs by Renee Nicole Macklin. That's what she went as back then. I want back my rocking chairs. Solipsist sunsets and coastal jungle sounds that are tercets from cicadas and pentameter from the hairy legs of cockroaches. I've donated Bibles to thrift stores, mash them up in plastic trash bags with an acidic Himalayan salt lamp. The post-baptism Bibles, the ones plucked from street corners from the meaty hands of zealots, the dumbed-downed, easy-to-read, parasitic kind. Remember more the slick rubber smell of high-glossy biology textbook pictures. They burn the hairs inside my nostrils in salt and ink that rubbed off my palms. Under the clippings of the moon at 2:45 a.m., I study and repeat. Ribosome, endoplasmatic, lactic acid, stamen. At the IHOP on the corner of Powers and Stetson Hills, I repeated and scribbled until it picked its way and stagnated somewhere I can't point to anymore. Maybe my gut. Maybe there in between my pancreas and large intestine is the pity brook of my soul. It's the ruler by which I reduce all things now, hard-edged and amp, splintering from knowledge that used to sit a cloth against fevered forehead. Can I let them both be? This fickle faith and this college science that heckles from the back of the classroom? Now, I cannot believe that the Bible and Quran and Bhagavad Gita are sliding long hairs behind my ear like mom used to, and exhaling from their mouths make room for wonder. All my understanding dribbles down the chin onto the chest and is summarized as life is merely two ovum and sperm and where those two meet and how often and how well and what dies there.
Wow. I mean,
it's a beautiful, beautiful poem.
Yeah, and just really speaking to the central conflict of America there, of life, religion, faith, and science.
And to think it was, yeah, published in 2020 at a time that was also so turbulent. Mm-hmm. And yeah, right as I think we need it most, poetry and the humanities and art. Literature and art and expression, it saves us, I think. And mm-hmm. and this is posted on Literary Hub as well, and she's honored as a prize-winning poet. And I think that Renee Nicole Good is somebody that we all have known in our lives, you know, we all love, and we all can see a little bit of ourselves in her, you know. It was really beautiful in some ways to read her words and to understand her story and to see what she thought of the world, what she thinks, her perspective. And I think that that's what we're missing a lot in these narratives in the news. We hear a lot about the justifications and the, you know, the meanings or the reasons why something has happened from, you know, the administration, but we rarely get to hear from the people themselves, the people mm-hmm. who are experiencing these acts of violence. And I really hope that we can take her words and we can bring them with us and make us think a little bit more about what we can help and contribute to our own society, and maybe how we can try bridge those gaps and help each other understand that equity and equality and justice can be for everyone. It doesn't have to be something that is placated. It should be a right for everybody.
Well, thanks for joining me in the studio today, Zarina.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm very happy to get to honor Renee Nicole Good, 37 years old.
Yeah, rest in peace and in power. And I hope you'll be able to join us again in the future.
Definitely. I have a lot. There's a lot more people that need to be honored and a lot more stories to be told. And I'm really looking forward to that opportunity. Thank you so much for having me, Jesse. This has been the perfect introduction to CJSF Radio.
Yeah, happy to have you here. We're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to hear from the UK jazz group Kokoroko. This is called Da Do Da.
Still want you. You know that I.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And I'm joined in studio now by another guest, Min. Hello, Min.
Hello.
Hey, come closer to the microphone.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. How are you?
It's all right. I was thinking today is going to be like very cold. It's actually quite warm outside.
Yeah, it was surprising given the snow yesterday that it's actually quite temperate.
That's great too. It allows us to be here.
Mm-hmm. We don't have a ton of time left in the show, Min, but you wanted to talk about a couple quick news items.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's switch from the topic that we're talking about. What's your listening name? Sorry.
My name is Zarina.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So this just has strayed into a little bit of entertainment aspect here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lately, Marvel Studio released more teasers to be frank about the new Avengers movie coming in this year.
Yeah,
and just have been a lot of spark a lot of discussion. Some complain about that. Many people online were already like laughing about how. Marvel's studios is leaning on nostalgia to mm-hmm. hold back the fans now.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it seems like they might have to do something, right? Because it seems, at least perception-wise, that there's been a bit of a drop-off since the days of
the Endgame
and all that. Yeah.
Avenger movie, the last Avenger movie. And let's see, so... they have teaser showing that Captain America, whose actor was supposed to be like left the whole franchise already.
Chris Evans.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you have already watched the Endgame movie,
mm-hmm.
Captain America had decided to went back time and stay with his crush or his girlfriend or wife now,
mm-hmm.
and back in the present days he is now just an old man, but the latest teaser showed that he's gonna be back again in the new upcoming Avengers movie that's come in, I guess, in this year's Christmas.
Right. Well, and they're bringing back Robert Downey Jr. Right. Yeah. Like it seems like they are
for Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Also like a very popular Marvel villain in the comic.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Movies about a year ahead. Still a lot of time they still haven't released trailer for the new Spider-Man movie that they're gonna release in the summer yet.
Oh wow.
Yeah, now we're gonna get a new Spider-Man movie in the summer. Okay, but so far, Marvel has just, received a lot of backlash from a lot of changes that their core fans don't like. After having Captain America, Iron Man, out of the picture after Endgame, because the actor is just retired.
Mm-hmm.
Also Black Widow, also how should I put this? She passed away. She sacrificed herself for the Avengers victory against Thanos. But then now they seem like they brought back Robert Downey Jr. To play the big villain after a huge scandal with another actor who played a villain character called Kang the Conqueror.
Kang, yes.
Kang the Conqueror. The actors received some scandal, and Marvel have to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have to quickly patch up things after that, they already have a long plan for Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah, now they
just
have to
like
pivot.
Thanos. Thanos took 10 years of preparation movie. For his first appearance. Not exactly first appearance. So for his
major
character arc, yeah. for his story, yeah, major. That's come to MCU, right? And a big Doctor Doom is a huge Marvel icon too. But he's getting how many years? I don't know. It's just two, three.
Yeah, it's a much shorter time frame than they gave to
Thanos.
Yeah,
and the movie so far seem very rushed on this too. There's lack of connections as much as Thanos did, and they seem like bringing back Robert Downey Jr. is just the one of the only way they can do to get people interested.
Yeah.
Also, like Captain America with Chris Evans. Don't know how that's gonna work. They also bring back. They will bring back the X-Men from Century Fox. At least I'm hopeful for the X-Men, because if X-Men come out before the Avengers, they may just be as big, even bigger than the Avengers. Actually, you know what the X-Men is most popular about? Just the conflict is about discrimination, mainly discrimination. So is this still timing? So 2 seconds.
Now. Yeah, 20 seconds.
Okay. You know what you want to do? Maybe save it later then.
Sure. We've
got to stick to schedule.
Come back to it next week. Thanks for joining me. I am excited to see what happens with the Avengers Doomsday. And I think it's interesting. They're trying to sort of thread the line between fan service and doing something new. But
yeah, I think they're trying to.